Well, it's very good to see you all here. As always, for these talkback sessions, I'd like us to read a few texts. They're on the screen there, or the references for them are on the screen there. So 1 Timothy 6 from verse 6 says this, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness." And then dropping down to verse 17, "Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life." Remarkable and very instructive passage there in Timothy. Proverbs 23 and the first 8 verses says this, "When you sit to dine with a ruler, note well what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you're given to gluttony. Do not crave his delicacies, for that food is deceptive. Do not wear yourself out trying to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. Cast but a glance at riches, and they are gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. Do not eat the food of a stingy man. Do not crave his delicacies. For he is the kind of man who is always thinking about the cost. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the little you have eaten and will have wasted your compliments." And then over to Proverbs 27 from verse 23. "Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. When the hay is removed and new growth appears and the grass from the hills is gathered in, the lambs will provide you with clothing and the goats with the price of a field. You will have plenty of goat's milk to feed you and your family and to nourish your servant girls." About a year ago, we did a talk about money in one of these talkback sessions. And like a lot of them, really, we just skim the surface. We didn't, that's much less intimidating thing. That we just, when you started walking down towards me, it was like I was going to be carried away. When we did that the last time, we obviously, like often in these talkbacks, we didn't quite get into a lot of the detail on some of the subjects. And so we thought it was useful to hit it again. Not only that, most of you have forgotten what we did talk about, and quite a few of you probably weren't even there that time. So it's always useful to think about this very immediate subject, because we're all handling all the time. This is not like a remote issue that's kind of obscure, because it's only relating to a few of you at certain times. It's not even like the subject of suffering, which may not be a current experience of yours in its intensity, but really to do with money, that it's always, there's always something going on to do with money in your life. So it's always a topic worth thinking about, and one that is a great area where we show we love Christ, or we show that we're storing up treasures on earth. What we're going to focus on particularly this evening is the area of spending. So assume for a moment that you made your money honestly. I hope that's true. Assume that you did not make it in a covetous, aggressive, obsessive way, at the expense of others, in some way, even if it was legal. So assume that you have some money, and it's good that you have that money. So what we're going to focus on this evening is just what do you do with that money, those possessions that you have? How do you spend them? So what I'd like us to do, first of all, for a few minutes, so there's an immediate breakout, to think about this question. There's some scrap paper there if you want to write it down, or you might just want to talk about it. But make a list, three lists really, things you definitely need to live, things you'd quite like but could do without, and things that you think Christians should really never have. Now, let's exclude illegal ones, like a gun that's not licensed in this country or something, or 10 wives. So exclude all the things that you can't have because they're illegal, but just things that you think perhaps a Christian shouldn't have. Okay? So make those three lists. There's scrap paper in front of most of you, and there's a few pens here, or you may just want to talk about it. So in the gatherings you're in, just talk about that now. Just for the sake of argument, I'm also asking you to exclude immoral things that happen to be illegal as well. That happen to be legal, sorry. Okay, you can carry on thinking about it, but we need to just move on a little bit. So this group over here, if we take a couple of groups on the things you definitely need, because there may be some overlap, but just quickly reel through a list. Do you want to do that, Hannah?
Food, clothes, electricity, utilities, somewhere to live, and water.
Just to clarify, how much food?
Just enough food to get you a little bit full, and that's it. No snacks. Oh, and for hospitality, but only like once a week.
I'm just talking to the air.
Anything to add from this group here? Oh, you've got to speak into the microphone, so otherwise other people can't hear.
We had that you shouldn't be malnourished, so or undernourished from the food, meaning so just enough. That's all we said about the food, to be healthy.
Has anybody mentioned shelter?
Yeah, hold on, we haven't got there yet.
Okay.
And a home and utilities for the home and some furniture to live on. Taxes.
Okay, we'll have one more group in what you definitely need. Somebody from this group?
Clothes, accommodation, education, books, food, drink, heat, water, etc., etc.
Okay. Education. Oh, another thing here that hasn't been covered yet.
The Bible.
Ooh.
Okay, good.
Transport as well.
Okay, transport. Transport. The Bible before that. Okay, if you haven't got anything else to list, perhaps you could say things that you'd quite like but could do without. Or you could say something you definitely need if there was something missed, or category of things missed.
No, I think we've captured all of them.
Well, didn't we say possibly insurance, but we didn't debate that very much.
Some are being provocative.
We did debate computer and internet and so on, because that is part of our communication these days and our lives. Transport we debated as well. If you're going to function in a society like ours, you need to be able to get around. So there are things that you could probably survive without, but you do really need.
Okay. Any other category of thing you'd quite like, but could do without?
Holidays.
Okay.
Away holidays.
Yeah. Yep. Understand? Anyone want to add anything, things you'd quite like, but could do without?
Pets.
What? What kind of pet would you like, Dan?
I don't like animals, so this is...
Okay. All right. Does this group have anything to say?
About what?
Finishing the second category and just going on to the third. Anything on the second one still?
We have musical instruments and excessive clothing.
I'm sure it's a bit ambiguous.
What, is category. Excessive clothing what you'd quite like?
Yes.
Excessive in what sense?
Well, it's the level below the stuff that you should never have.
Okay. Okay.
What?
Just a bit less than...
I'm just qualifying the ambiguous.
No, it's just like 10 pairs of shoes.
Okay. 10 pairs of shoes as an example. But yeah. Not something you'd definitely say you could never have.
Yeah.
But an excessive number of items.
Excessive but not extortionate.
Okay. What about things you should never have as a Christian? Like this group. Anything to add on that?
No. We've got those things, which are both in, either in more than one.
Okay. They had Ouija boards and gambling.
Which are both immoral things. So
do you call them Ouija boards or Ouija boards?
Ouija
boards. Anything this group has that's... No, you've got to hold the mic, please.
If you own a car that's more expensive than a house... Or if you own too much jewellery, have a private jet, a chauffeur, a maid, or too many bedrooms in your house.
That's things that a Christian should never have.
Yeah.
A maid.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't agree with that.
Okay, now that was a point that's been made. That's what we like. Anything you'd like to add, this group here? Listen to the other people, please. Shh.
Personalised number plate on your car.
I really agree with that. But I know I shouldn't. Because I probably would quite like one, but I don't have one. Things you should never have as a Christian. Anybody in this group want to contribute?
Fur coats.
Fur coats for
a
what
limo.
Reason?
Because it's cruel.
Okay.
And it's expensive. And it doesn't love God's
okay.
creation.
Okay, anything else? Fur coats and limousine.
I guess...
Listen, guys.
Okay.
One at a time.
Just from our group, I think we felt that to point to any particular thing, that is a Porsche or whatever else it might be, is actually... maybe to miss the point that what really matters is, am I spending more on me than loving my neighbour? Right. So it's all relative to what God has given us. If we're giving most of what we, of the generosity of God to us away, whether we have a Porsche or not isn't the issue. The issue is who will be focused on, right?
Hmm.
Now you could say always that a Porsche must mean I'm focused on me, but not necessarily.
Okay. Helpful. Anyone want to say anything that occurred to them in the last couple of minutes about the subject? Yes?
I would agree with what you've just said. When I went to America, there was a guy at a church there who was incredibly rich, and he gave a lot to the church, but he also was a member at a country club, which was a motor racing thing, and he owns like Maseratis and Porsches and Ferraris. But that's it's all relative to what he had. He gave a huge amount to the church, and he was very sort of willing to give to other people. So I think it is kind of relative and where your focus is.
Yes, I think it's probably not even as simple, though, as do they give a lot to the church? It's, as Les was saying, really, but I'm sure you were implying as well, it's also to do with people's hearts, isn't it? So they may be very charitable. Lots of very rich pop stars and so on are very charitable and give a lot of money away, but it doesn't pain them very much because... they have so much, so it's just worth thinking about that. I'm not questioning what you're saying that the heart issue is much more important than a specific item that somebody has. Just try not to engage too much with that. I'm trying not to engage too much with all of that. I think what I was just simply trying to illustrate is that we probably think somewhere. There is a line, which may be different for different people, a line to draw between what you might call reasonable luxury and excessive luxury. What I mean by that is that I don't think any of us are really arguing for simple utility, like how much do you actually need, in an absolute sense, to survive through the day. You know, how many nutrients do you need? You know, do you need any entertainment? No. You need sort of food, water. You need, you know, a sufficiently warm house and one item of clothing. Now, some people in some cultures have to survive right down at that meagre level. We could argue that we need to live like that, but I don't think anyone is going to be arguing that right at that level here. But then, so take us beyond that level, like we've got one spare pair of shoes. We're then in an area of luxury, aren't we? And we're all living in luxury. We've all got a little bit more or a lot more than we actually need to survive. So, in that area of luxury, somewhere there's probably a line or a boundary of some sort, might be a wide boundary, where we think, maybe I'm getting into an area where I am exposing the fact that my heart's not right by how much I'm spending on my luxury. And that's what we're just going to try and think a little bit more about tonight. Sorry, I've started to answer the question. Just all together now, I think I'm proposing that we should think carefully about our spending. Anyone want to offer me any answers as to why we should think carefully about our spending?
Because it's so easy to spend.
Because it's so easy to spend, yep. Just simple answers like that, yeah.
What we spend our money on just kind of reflects how we feel about our faith to the people around us.
Okay.
It's not our money, it's God's money,
so we need to think carefully about how we spend it from that point of view. It reflects what may be in our hearts.
We have the most control over what we spend. Like when we get paid, the kind of stuff that generally, whereas you actually have control over what you spend. More than...
We have the most control over what we spend.
I mean, as opposed to what you get paid.
I still don't understand that point.
As in...
No, go for it again.
No, just that you have quite a lot of control over what you can spend.
Okay, you have a lot of control of...
You have a lot of choice.
Okay. So we do have choices, so we need to think carefully about the choices we have.
We'll be giving an account of it on the day of judgment.
Okay, we'll be giving an account of it on the day of judgment. Others observe what we spend. Very good point. Christian and non-Christian. And it may cause them to stumble in some way or give them a bad example if misunderstood or if rightly understood. Anything else?
We tend to spend on things that we love.
Yeah, we tend to spend on things that we love. So it may, as I think was said already as well, expose something in our heart. I think all those are really helpful things to say. And I just want to focus on a couple of things, which is sort of trying to answer the question why we should think carefully about our spending. And... I suppose they're just two cultural pressures that we feel. So I think one reason why we should think carefully about our spending is this. Because we're not just consumers. We're not just consumers. Here's where it gets all academic for about 30 seconds. Consumerism is defined in this way. It's a social and economic order that encourages the purchases of goods and services in ever greater amount. So it's not just an economy, it's an economy that is encouraging greater and greater consumption. That's what consumerism as a word is. And consumerism kind of includes the tendency of us to identify strongly with the products or services that we consume, especially those with commercial brands, because of the perceived status or statement that those bring or make. Consumerism can become a god, and some social scientists think that luxuries and unnecessary consumer products may act as a social mechanism allowing people to identify with like-minded individuals. If you buy a certain brand, you suddenly become part of a club who also wear that brand. So you've kind of you've included yourself in a club with no social effort, just by purchasing. So it's kind of a way of social inclusion without any sacrifice. I suppose you sacrifice the money, but without any social sacrifice. So some people analyse it in that way. In 1955, this guy, who I'd never heard of, but it was a very good statement, so I included it, Victor Lebeau, or Lebeau, he said this, which was pretty good for 1955, and is very relevant. Our enormously productive economy demands that we make consumption our way of life, that we convert the buying and use of goods into rituals, that we seek our spiritual satisfaction and our ego satisfaction in consumption. We need things consumed, burned up, worn out, replaced and discarded at an ever-increasing rate. I think that was just priceless in 1955, and it's just such a perfect statement about the pressures that we're under now. That idea of just consuming at an ever-increasing rate, and the process of consumption has now been turned into a ritual. That's why I didn't like shopping. I figured it out. Because it's a consumptive ritual, perhaps. There may be other reasons, like my lack of patience and interest and all kinds of other things. But it's very interesting question that it kind of raises about, has your consumption become like a ritual? I think the Bible understood well, because God understands well, that tendency in all of us. It didn't just start in 1955. Maybe the kind of mechanization of it and the global nature of it started, but Jesus says, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." Life doesn't consist in consuming. That's not the ritual. That's not the thing that will bring satisfaction, and it's not really what life is all about. That insatiable appetite summed up really well in Ecclesiastes 5. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. As goods increase, this is not 1955, as goods increase, so do those who consume them. Wow, this is an amazing economic statement. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. It's not about what people need, is it? As goods increase, what an amazing economic statement. And what benefits are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? Consumerism is about owning and consuming things, not for their kind of intrinsic value to you, but to feast your eyes on them. And the Bible and God understood that well before any social scientist had a look at it. I love this next proverb. A warning against consumerism. If you find honey, eat just enough. This was also written before Winnie the Pooh. If you find honey, eat just enough, too much of it, and you will vomit. Do you think the writer of this proverb is talking about honey only? Like, here's a little bit of advice about honey. It doesn't apply to the rest of the consumer society. Of course he isn't. He's thinking about life. If you have some luxury item like honey, then eat just enough, because too much of it will cause you to vomit. So, have another little breakout session in your groups. Am I making this up? Is the pull of consumerism, what I've described as that excessive consumption of goods as a way of life, is that real for you, and how can you avoid it? Go. I want to make a proposition, and then be interested in what you have to say. The proposition is that Christians, we as Christians, need to contend with, need to fight the ever-present pull and power of a consumerism which is way beyond utility. That's my proposition. There is clearly a level of luxury that we can enjoy. I'll talk about that just at the end of this evening. But there is the possibility that consuming becomes an end in itself, and so this is something that I think we should avoid, because it's way beyond utility and is becoming idolatry. So, that's my proposition. What do you guys think about it? So, any comments from this group on that thing, what I just said, and the question?
I think we said that the pull of consumerism is real because it's all around us. And even if we try and be sort of cost effective with our things, it still influences our thinking. When we're looking at technology and stuff that we have, even if we do try and get a cheap deal, we're still trying to associate with a certain brand to get the most from it. So even though we're being sort of conscious with our money, we're still associating with brands and things within that. I think we said the way to avoid it would be to understand where you're, what you're making an idol of, whether it's what you're buying or whether it's God or the way that you're spending. Because you could even make an idol of the fact that you're super frugal, and then your heart would be in the wrong place with that.
Okay, helpful, good, thank you. This group here, anything to say on those questions?
Yeah, we talked quite a lot about how it's very real for us, but the kind of root of it is very subtle. So in trying to appear educated for a course or trying to fit in with friends, what can start as a good thing quickly leads to consumerism, which obviously, you know, same as a lot of idolatry. And there's an awful lot of social influence on our own pride. It makes it very difficult to avoid. In terms of avoiding it, just one thing that someone said was being accountable to others. If you can get to a point where you are brutally accountable to someone as a Christian to say, can you really help me? Because I might struggle with how much I spend. If you can be open and honest with that as brothers and sisters, then you have, that's a really useful thing. Making a real effort to think of others and just kind of taking real efforts to focus on God as the one who gives you things. So you don't have to be a consumer because God gives you these things. You don't need these from other places. And possibly limit, you know, placing limits on your paycheck or spending. But we did say that that is a very quick route to legalism. So maybe that needs a bit of discussion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Very good. Someone in this group?
Me? I guess like the other two have already spoken, we recognise there is a massive pull of consumerism. We reflected at the beginning really on how much our economy depends on it. If we stopped consuming as we do, probably 30% of the population wouldn't have jobs. We need to recognise that, of course, but that doesn't justify consumerism, it just describes it. As to the sort of manifestation of consumerism, I think we focused on our tendency to go after the latest model of the thing, whether it's fashion or electronic goods. We were tempted as the rather kind of more senior group in the room, one of the more senior groups in the room, to ask how many people here have changed, how many times you've changed your mobile phone in the last 5 years, which would be an indicator of consumerism, right? Of, you know, you need the latest model, you need an iPhone because everything else is passé. But do we, you know? So we're all struggling with it, and depending on our propensity, we'll go in a certain direction or not, so we recognise that. How to avoid it? Well, if you're spending beyond your means to respond to your desire to have the latest, then clearly there ought to be an indication that you're getting it wrong. We didn't have enough time on that, but just thinking about it, if we start with what we know we ought to be spending our money on, and we can be super spiritual about it, but we know what that is, putting God first, putting family first and so on, putting others first. And then we see what's left over that God in his goodness has given to us, because after all, he gives us what we need, then I ought to also control our consumerism.
Thank you. Now, these three groups, anything you want to add? Anything you want? Go on, Linda.
I think it's quite a bit to do with ego.
Yeah.
Thinking of certain members of the family that want to look the part and want to, you know, they're worried about people will think of them, so it's all connected with yourself. Mm. And
yes. Yeah, and that's something to think about, the roots of that. Anything this group would like to add? Yes, Sarah?
We thought that peer pressure was definitely a factor, and that was worse the younger you were, and that maybe as you matured, that became less of a factor.
Thank you. And then anything you guys want to add?
Say it. I'm spokesperson for Ali. Because, well, Ali said it. No, in terms of how do we avoid it, we're thinking about how you, having a realistic view of what that consumerism is going on all around you. So I guess tying in a bit to what the first group said, what David said, but so reading your Bible and knowing God's will for that better will help you recognise where you're kind of selling yourself into things, because you'll recognise more that the kind of the lies about being content if you have this, and then even if you have that, you still were not completely satisfied. So that's a one way of trying to get in hand with being, having a right level of, you know, getting stuff and living in the world and having, getting what you need and what, yeah.
Good. Like it.
Yeah.
Very good, Ali. I think those are all really helpful things to say. I suppose one thing that's quite consistent is that you're all kind of recognising there's a subtlety to it, and actually, even as you begin to open up the argument and say, from this slightly more senior group over here, you know, raising the question at least, did you need to change your mobile phone 5 times in the last 5 years? There's a subtlety, because it's about the complex issue of, could you afford to change your mobile phone? That's a question. Why did you change your mobile phone is another question. So there's the affordability question, and we'll think about that in just a minute. But there's also the motivation question, which is harder to understand. Why have I got this phone, wherever it is, that I've lost? Interesting. Why have I got that phone, or had it until this evening? So you see how much of an idol it is to me, because now I can't see it. You think I'm making that up, but I really don't know where it is. Why have I got that particular brand? I'm not sure I actually know. I love technology, right? Now, am I influenced by brands too much? Am I influenced by my love of technology too much? Some people like breakfast. I like that too, actually. Some people like cars. I'm not so interested in cars. You can tell that from my cars. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard, isn't it, to understand that the motivation. And we need to, as Dan said, we need to think about both the affordability issues and the bit that Dan said, about the heart issues, and at least try and understand why. At least try and understand. We're never going to be perfect at it, and we need other people to help us. But to at least try and understand, at least ask the question, why do I want this? Do I want it because I want to enjoy the rich creation God's given and I can afford it? Do I want this because I'm being influenced by this massive tide of consumerism? And at least tonight, if nothing else, you're kind of just naming it. You're saying, it's there. You know, it's like saying the wind is blowing outside. Being aware of it is better than not, isn't it? And it's a massive wind that's blowing. Or a massive tide that's, whatever do tides do, flow, ebb, all that kind of thing. It's massive and it's very influential. So think about consumerism in terms of your spend. Second reason, I think, which is very much connected with that, is that as an opposite to consumerism, we need to cultivate and model contentment. This is quite familiar, so I'll just quickly move through this. Philippians 4:11-13, Paul describes his own contentment. both in situations of need and in situations of plenty. Interesting. It talks about plenty. It doesn't say, I know what it is to be in need and I know what it is to have absolutely sufficient, just enough. No, he talks about plenty as well. But in all those circumstances, being content. Or 1 Timothy 6, that we read part of, godliness with contentment is great gain. Understanding that everything comes from God, understanding that trying to get rich leads us to all kinds of temptation and is the root of all kinds of evil, loving money in that way. Recognizing that, we cultivate, we really try hard to think in this, all areas of our life, but particularly in this area of prosperity, to really encourage ourselves to be contented. So we take opportunities for better pay, but we don't live for them. We try and be content in the now. And we think carefully, because we're contented, about the pull of consumerism and whether we're looking for our contentment in buying the next product. I said in preparation of this that we wouldn't go over time tonight, because we often do with talkback, so I'm going to try really hard not to. So I'm going to just jump on to the next topic, having done contentment, not forever, but having just done it for the moment, and miss out that bit. Third reason why I think we need to think very carefully about our spending. We're not consumers. We need to cultivate a model of contentment. Third reason, which has kind of been alluded to already, but we really want to prioritise on giving. So we're trying to avoid the cultural tide, and we're trying to be content with what we have, and that includes what we own. And in really simple terms, it's really obvious, if you spend all your money on yourself, and yourself could include your family and so forth, but if you spend all your money on yourself, then there isn't anything left. That's obvious, isn't it? So you haven't got anything left to give. You haven't got anything left to give to those who are in need, in any category, and you haven't got anything left to give towards God's work. And God promises to bless those who are generous. So Proverbs 22, verse 9, a generous man will himself be blessed, for he shares his food with the poor. And lots of Proverbs like that. The stingy, I love that word, are eager to get rich and are unaware that poverty awaits them. 1 John 3:17. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? So we need to not spend all our money because we need some left. So when we see people in need, we're not stingy, but we're generous because we recognise God blesses us as we're generous to anybody in need. Interestingly, by the way, although giving to the church as an organisation is a big deal for us just at the moment, a lot of the giving that's talked about in the New Testament is to do with various people who are in the crisis of need, and churches that perhaps in a territory where there's famine or others going through other kinds of hardship. It's not to say we shouldn't give to the church as an organisation, but there's a whole category of giving to those in need which we just need to think about whether that's included as our category of giving, because it's definitely there throughout the Bible. But there is the giving to what you might call the recognized body of the church. There's the church in the Old Testament. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. God will bless as we give to God's work, to support those who are ministering there. And 1 Corinthians 16:12, talking about collection for a gift, without getting to the subtleties of quite what that gift is being used for. And 2 Corinthians 9 again talks about giving not under compulsion or reluctantly, but cheerfully. So, we want to be careful about what we spend because we need some money left over in order to be able to give. Be generous, be spontaneous, make sure that you give to God first. course, be discreet in your giving. Don't be showy about it. Jesus has a lot to say about that. But give. Be regular and give it some priority. So, as Les really alluded to already, but it's not even simply a matter of don't spend all your money because you won't have any left. You actually need to kind of invert that and say, decide what you want as money for crisis giving and money for giving to God's work. Decide that first before you spend anything, and then spend with great enjoyment what's left. Now, of course, we may need help in thinking, especially if we're a new Christian, what that looks like. Because we may say, well, I've decided to give 10p to God's work and keep 10p for any people in need. So now I'm going to enjoy the rest of my £100,000. And we just might need help from brothers and sisters to say, well, maybe that's not quite in balance. So, again, it's a great area where we can help each other. So we want to prioritise on giving. Be a regular giver. And we need to do some saving. So we don't want to spend all our money, and we need to think carefully about what we're spending, because we want to make sure we're prioritising on giving, and because I think we need to do some saving. So your last breakout, I think, what things might you want to save for, and can you do too much saving? A few minutes on that. What things might you want to save for? Or perhaps you even question the proposition, no, I don't need to save at all. What things might you need to save for, and can you save too much? And I need more than a yes or no, but a little bit. Okay, we are rushing for home. This group here, anything you want to say about the issue of saving?
Oh, it's tough.
It's on. It's already on.
We were saying that often you can save too much, but also there is, it is sensible to think, this is for my father's benefit. But maybe when your parents get old and you have to think about looking after them.
So you may want to save to make provision for other family members.
Yeah, for the future, to just thinking ahead. And that doesn't have to be mass, because also saving doesn't mean that you've got to try and put away hundreds a month. It could just be, you know, you start to put away 20, 30 pounds a month and leave that money and, yeah.
Okay.
A little bit of financial advice there.
Thank you. What things might you want to save for this group? Come on, Heather, you normally have something to say on this.
Pension is a form of saving. Unexpected emergencies at home, like plumbing disasters. Holidays, education for children, deposit for a house or a flat.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. Anyone want to say anything in this group? Adrian's got to speak this time.
I think we're concerned that if you save more than, well, save to an extent that stops you from giving properly, then that's a problem. But, of course, you do have to be prudent. We don't think it's good to be in a position where you recklessly give away all your belongings and then turn up on the church door and demand welfare.
So how do you scale that? And it's a hard question, but you might have some thoughts.
No, we didn't get to the answer to that.
Like, do you want to put away enough so in retirement you can live in the manner that you're living now, or do you want to... Do you think we should give in a pension and so forth so we can afford to, so there's enough money to live on a sort of subsistence level that's maybe 50% of what we're getting at? I don't know how anyone thinks about these things. I don't know if anyone thinks about
these things. I think it's helped if you, because we don't know about the future. The Lord does, but we don't. What we do know is that the government is changing its approach to welfare and support of ageing population because it can't afford to do it itself, right? So, and we know that. God's shown us that because that's in the news. And so we have to think through that and make some planning for that. And as Keturah says, it might be our parents rather than, of course, mine are long since gone, but just using it in a general sense. However, for the Christian, if he doesn't need the money, he can always will it to the work of the Lord. So making provision doesn't mean spending necessarily on self, does it? Because you can always give it away when you pop your clogs.
Yes.
You know?
Good. Thank you. That's okay. No, indeed. Does anyone else in this group want to speak? Stan's always spoken.
When we were talking about savings, it kind of came down to contingencies for the future and large one-off payments you're going to have to make, like weddings. Yeah.
And what, sorry?
Yeah,
keep going.
We thought that might cause a buzz. But in terms of spending too much, savings for the present becomes difficult, is what's already been said. Difficult in terms of living for yourself and living for the church, but also when your complete security comes from those savings, like the parable of the rich fool, when he's putting all his security in actually all the money he has, all the possessions, and God comes out and calls him a fool because of his kind of almost reckless saving. There has to be a degree of faith in God, basically. It's unwise otherwise.
Good, good. Very good points. Anything in this group to say?
I think that's a no.
Good. Well, I'm glad you had a healthy discussion. All we're really provoking in a lot of these talkbacks, and it's true of this one tonight, I hope we're just starting the beginning of the discussion. It's not like, you know, here's the answer. It always was 13.4, and now you've got the answer, you can go away and work with it. These are discussions that I really encourage you to have a lot. Because we need each other's help in kind of working through these, because there's not a simple answer, but some of us may have an understanding of money better than others. Some of us may understand politics and where the future of pensions is going better than others. Some of us may understand better than others where to invest our money. Some may be better at modelling a sort of an abandon about money, and that's quite helpful for other people. Some of us may not worry at all about money, and that's quite helpful for other people to experience. Maybe correct, but it also might correct them who do worry about money and future provision. And so forth. So we can all really help each other in this, in being real and being open to being critiqued. You're too casual about money, you're too obsessed about money. Not that we just say that, because that sounds rather a polarised discussion, but you know what I mean. Hearing that and helping each other. So I really encourage you to think about that. I came across... this is just to give a rationale in terms of saving... there's lots of, I think, principles about making provision for your family in the New Testament. And just here's some examples in Proverbs. I've got some handouts, by the way, with all the texts on and the basic bullet points, so you can take those away with you. Plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty. So planning is good, so you don't run out of money. In the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. Sometimes I have been a foolish man who devours all he has. Put your outdoor work in order and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. Great proverb saying there is some kind of sequence in this. There is some planning needed, and maybe you have to wait for certain things because you need to get the kind of income stream sorted out. Brilliant. Just very helpful. I'm sure you understand the principle there, don't you? Yeah, don't you? Don't you? Right. The fields are where you're going to get your income from if you're a farmer. So sort your fields out, get the harvest going before you start building a house. You know, live in a tent for a while you get the sort of you get your priorities sorted out, which is a reasonable, prudent income generating or at least food generating thing before you think about sitting back and enjoying. Is that better? Is that a fair explanation of that? It might be applied to having an education. It certainly applies to being diligent in sort of getting your life in such an order that you can provide for yourself. So it might include getting an education. That's a very good application, actually. The more I think about it, the better it gets. So yeah, that's good. That's a good point. Yeah, get a job before you get a car. That's a good one. When you get a job, you may be able to afford a car, or you may need a car, and then it becomes clearer. This is another really helpful one. I love these rural ones. Be sure to know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. What it's saying is get something going economically that has some sort of continuation to it, not some sort of one-off thing. Because you see, you get land with clothing. It's basically saying, you know, in that rural economy, be sensible, pay attention to the things that are going to provide for you. Don't just be sort of, oh, I couldn't care less. You know, I'm just going to sit around and chew tobacco or whatever they did. Just think diligently about your fields, and then you'll better nourish yourself and provide for other people. See that, to nourish your female servants. Brilliant. I love these proverbs so much. Right, we haven't got time for that. Here's a few suggestions. These are my laws for you, because it's not laws really, which you can just go away and think about, to do with purchasing. Decide on giving first before you make discretionary purchases. Discretionary purchases, I mean, there are some things you just can't avoid paying, like council tax or something. Don't be at such full stretch, like you have this perfect budget, that you have no money to be spontaneously generous. That makes sense? Avoid things that by their nature will distract you from seeking first God's kingdom. Items that just by what they are, you know, if they're a product or if they're a hobby or a place, that just intrinsically, by what they are, they sort of drive you away from being able to seek first God's kingdom. Now, it becomes legalistic if you say, what? You know, is a luxury liner, if you could afford one, a distraction? Well, I could turn it into a church, couldn't I? Or whatever. But, you know, it may be. If it's something kind of that is an isolated holiday home in the North Pole, which requires lots of renovation, I'm not sure you're going to better seek first God's kingdom and indulge that hobby of, you know, keeping up that North Pole related thing. But maybe there's a, you know, mission to Eskimos, ministry in igloos to Mexico. I don't know, you may be able to justify it, but just think about that. Things that may just by their nature distract you, just take you away because they need lots of time. You buy things that need lots of time to kind of enjoy them or to make them work or whatever. Try and think about buying things for their usefulness, not for their status. Whoops, just going back to those thoughts about trying to uncover our hearts. Reject anything that encourages, again, by their nature, some kind of addiction that are sort of intrinsically kind of addictive, or they encourage a sort of repeated addiction. Don't ask me to give an example of that. I can't think of one just right now. I was just thinking in my head. I can't think of one just right now. Yes?
I was just going to ask, does that involve something like a hobby? For example, playing a musical. It's not addiction, but it requires an awful lot of effort and influence to gain proficiency at it. It will take a lot of your time and will consume a lot of your resources in order to...
It may be. It depends why you're learning it. But it may be that... I'm not sure that's a typical example. It may be. It depends on your attitude. It may be. Maybe. I suppose that addictive things may be things that become habitual. Coffee? Pardon? I was going to say that, and I thought it was, yeah. Gaming, but... Yeah, I'm sure there are better examples, but that was the one that was in my head, but I was trying not to say it. I'm saying it. Gaming, I think, is one that may be good in and of itself, but it may become addictive, so purchasing lots of gaming-related stuff, just maybe. It may be that people really enjoy it, and it's good, but it's just worth thinking about. To reject anything that encourages addiction, kind of by its nature. Develop a habit of giving things away. And then finally, in the last 3 minutes, enjoy earning, enjoy spending, enjoy giving, and enjoy saving. I love also this text in Ecclesiastes. When God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and to be happy in their toil, this is a gift from God. And brilliantly put also in Timothy, 1 Timothy 6:17, which we read a bit earlier. It's a warning against the rich, but not to put their hope in wealth, but it also talks about God who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Not just for our survival, but for our enjoyment. So having tried to think carefully about what we're spending our money on, having tried to make sure that we have prioritized on giving, having tried to think about what we may need to save for, and talk to others about that too, having tried to keep some of those, or maybe think about some rules of thumb that might help us, enjoy what God's given. There is a joy in spending, in enjoying what God has generously given to you. There's a joy in earning money, there's a joy in spending money, and you can be thankful. And as you spend money sacrificially, you can model the gospel, can't you? Giving graciously, generously to others, and enjoy doing that, and think that in some small way I'm being like God in my generosity. And when I'm enjoying some of the possessions myself, I'm just enjoying the rich generosity of God. So in both my giving and my enjoyment of what I receive, I'm experiencing the goodness and the graciousness of God. And in some ways, I'm also reenacting that. We just about made it for 8 o'clock, so I'm going to close in prayer. Please take the handouts. I printed out quite a lot, so it'd be great to take them away because it's got all the texts on. Read the whole of the book of Proverbs at least once a year because it's really helpful for these kind of issues, and talk to each other.